Coming up on Chirp Weekly Edition.
And this movie's not for education on the campus.
State legislators step in to stop an X-rated film from screening at the Hof.
I use it to stay up all night so I can concentrate while I stay up all night studying.
A performance-enhancing drug, and it's not steroids.
I was always, like, the pastry guy, the cake guy, in every restaurant and hotel that I worked at.
And a pastry icon makes a tasty visit to campus. Chirp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Chirp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Chirp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello and welcome to Chirp Weekly Edition. I'm Andrew Lean.
And I'm John Wilmot. A planned screening of a hardcore porn film at the Hof Theater has led to a showdown between the university, students, and the state legislature. It all began last week with the promotion of a midnight Saturday showing of Pirates 2, a self-proclaimed XXX $10 million adult movie. News of that did not set well with some lawmakers in Annapolis, including Baltimore County Republican Andrew Harris, who took to the Senate floor Thursday morning.
We're talking about giving extra dollars to the University of Maryland to freeze that tuition, and they're saying, wait a minute, those dollars in some way support hardcore pornography for their students going there. That's amazing to me.
Harris then threatened to introduce an amendment to the budget, cutting funding to any school in the university system showing a pornographic movie outside an academic setting. The movie was provided free to the Hof Theater. Students were to be charged $4 to cover staffing costs. The reason for showing the movie? The program coordinator for the Hof Theater says student advisors said it would be fun and would be an alternative to late-night Saturday activities. And there were plans for Planned Parenthood to talk to students before the movie about safe sex. It was not to be. The showing was abruptly canceled by the university. Milry Williams is a spokesman for President Dan Moat.
It became clear that with all of the controversy surrounding it, plus the educational element being lost in the whole thing, that it just didn't make any sense to move forward with it.
Canceling the screening may have satisfied some in Annapolis, but members of the student community were less than pleased. That includes Kenton Stalder, a candidate for SGA office.
Using the budget, almost $500 million, and jeopardizing 45,000 people for the actions of a few is ridiculous, especially when those actions are in no way illegal.
Others raised the issue of the First Amendment, questioning the legality of blocking the film from being shown at a public university. University spokesman Milry Williams disagrees.
The management of the Hof Theater and the students who work there are employees of the university. And, it was essentially the university making its own decision to provide the film and then making its own decision to cancel it.
But the matter is far from over. Kenton Stalder and members of his party are planning another screening of the film on campus. And that has Senator Harris, again, threatening budget action. Stalder says he's not worried.
We feel that action is a bluff. We don't think that he will have the votes. We don't think the amendment would pass. We think he's trying to strong-arm the student body and the administration into following his will, and we'd like to see him try.
Other schools have screened the movie without incident, including Northwestern, UCLA, Carnegie Mellon, and, most recently, UC Davis. Chirp Weekly Edition will continue to provide updates as this story continues to develop.
Looks like things are on hold for Chirp Taxi, a late-night transportation alternative for students. Word of the delay in the program comes from SGA President Jonathan Sachs, who told last week's SGA meeting that Chirp Taxi has hit a legal snafu. But Sachs declined to elaborate. As proposed, Chirp Taxi would pick up students and allow them to pay for the ride with the students' IDs. Sachs has been working closely with DOTS to implement the program. The SGA president says he's hopeful it will get a green light before his term ends next month.
Another group on campus is taking a look at a proposed Good Samaritan policy still awaiting a vote in the University Senate. The RHA last week passed a resolution calling on the organization to consider support for the plan. Under the proposal now before the University Senate, students on campus who call for medical assistance when a friend is in need after consuming too much alcohol would not be subject to penalty from resident life or possibly police. The policy would need to be passed by the University Senate before taking effect. RHA President Alex Beekler says her group would be most affected by such a policy.
It is something that mostly affects our 10,000 on-campus students, and we just want to make sure that we get all the research we can and weigh in before it officially goes through the University Senate or wherever the next step may be.
The RHA will officially vote on supporting the proposed policy at their next meeting, April 15th.
Been frustrated by trying to find a parking space where you won't get ticketed for being in the wrong place at the wrong time? TERP Weekly Edition's Joey Whalen says, take heart. Things may be about to get better.
The seemingly never-ending confusion over parking lots may soon be resolved. That's because SGA President Jonathan Sachs says change may be on the way.
We have a real opportunity to get color-coded parking signs done, which would indicate to students and visitors and faculty where they can park and where they can't park, and hopefully eliminate some of those horrible parking tickets, which I know, just like everybody else, I have plenty of.
The plan calls for the current parking lot signs on campus to be replaced by ones that would have a colored border highlighting what type of parking is available in that particular lot.
It would be based on the restrictions. So like unrestricted after 4 p.m., like lot one, would turn red. The border would be red. There's like the complicated rules would be checkered. 24-hour restricted would be black, and yellow would be after 8 p.m. unrestricted, I believe, or faculty and staff until 8 p.m. So it would help people to see, like, oh, that one's yellow, I can't park in yellow yet.
The proposal isn't new, but Sachs made it one of his priorities before taking office last year. Now, says Sachs, it may finally become a reality.
We've tackled that B sooner than anybody else, and I'm very proud of what we've done.
Sachs' term as SGA president ends on May 5th, but he says his goal is to have the plan in place before he leaves office. I'm Joey Whalen, reporting for TERP Weekly Edition.
Spring break is over. Most midterms are complete. But finals and end-of-semester papers are still to come. And sometimes students have trouble getting it all done and go looking for help. For some students, it comes in the form of a pill. While it seems there may be a pill for everything these days, TERP Weekly Edition's Melissa Mark says, in this case, it can come at a price.
Coffee and energy drinks just aren't enough for some college students anymore. The coordinator of substance abuse prevention programs, Kendra Smoke McMillan, says some students are now looking for extra academic help from a prescription medication known as Adderall.
We're definitely hearing more and more students talk about it, either because they've tried it, because, you know, it's the quote-unquote study drug, or either they know friends that are trying it.
Adderall, an amphetamine, is also prescribed for those with attention deficit disorder. It's widely known to increase alertness and concentration. That's why this student finds it so attractive.
I use it to stay up all night so I can concentrate while I stay up all night studying. So if I take it, I can sit and read a book for like 12 hours at a time without getting up.
It's estimated as many as 1 in 5 college students uses Adderall as a study aid. Smoke McMillan also says students who take the drug unprescribed usually do not take into consideration its effects with their own pre-existing medical conditions. Nor do they think about the impact it may have with pills they're already taking. And of course, there's the inevitable side effect, the crash.
They might stay up all night, but when it comes time for them to actually take the test, they're exhausted. Or, you know, anxiety or paranoia that might, you know, be as a result of taking the drug.
But the student I spoke with already had a solution to that problem.
I feel great. Usually I can plan it so that it usually lasts for about 12 hours. So I plan it so that I crash after the test. Then I just sleep for a few hours. I feel better.
In efforts to raise awareness about Adderall, the peer education program gives presentations throughout campus about substance abuse. The Health Center is also creating a website designed to give information about drugs like Adderall. I'm Melissa Mark reporting for TERP Weekly Edition.
Coming up, a special report about the economy's effect on student housing.
And a campus forum concerning suicide bombings. Stay tuned. This is TERP Weekly Edition. Weekly Edition. I'm Andrew Lean.
And I'm John Wilmot. The economy has taken its toll on many people, but with little to no income, students may be getting hit the hardest. That extends to finding a place to live around campus. In a TERP Weekly Edition special report, Joey Whalen, Melissa Mark, and Mike Plant look into how the economy has affected student housing options.
The economy and the on-campus housing crisis have forced many upperclassmen to look off-campus for housing options. The problem is, there are only so many places to go. For one student, elsewhere has meant spending her nights all year on a couch in the living room in an already overcrowded off-campus house.
We decided to share the room, but I actually ended up converting the downstairs living room into my kind of sleeping area. And at first it was fine. I mean, it's fine because I pay like a lot less.
Even students who are lucky enough to have a bed don't always get the luxury of an actual bedroom.
Whenever the inspector comes from College Park, I have to take all my stuff outside my room, put my bed in the laundry room, and sleep upstairs for when the inspector comes so that he doesn't know that we are living in the illegal bedroom. And now I have a paper sign on my door that says this room is not legally allowed to have people sleep in it.
The economy hasn't been kind to landlords either. They've struggled to fill the open spots left vacant by normally eager students. Off-campus housing advisor Adrian Wicker.
Our listings stay on the database longer, so landlords are having a harder time filling their properties.
Landlords are feeling the crunch, but it may be the students who are the real rule benders in an attempt to save some money.
Doing seven, but our landlord doesn't know, and that we're splitting the one extra room, and I'm not sure that he'd be too happy about that.
While many students have been forced to take under-the-table action in order to stay afloat in these tougher-than-normal times, Wicker feels the economic situation has forced many students to think twice before pulling the trigger on any housing decisions.
I think students are being wiser about their choices. They're looking around more. I think some students are probably choosing to stay at home because of, it's just cheap, you know, it's cheaper.
One student has a suggestion for how to avoid such problems.
The landlord, I mean, it would be nice if he changed the window so that it was bigger or something, but because it does advertise it as a six-bedroom house. So, yeah, I mean, maybe you should change that, but then again, it's our choice to live in the room, so it kind of sucks. But we're all broke, so we don't really have many choices.
For Joey Whalen and Melissa Mark, I'm Mike Plant, reporting for Terp Weekly Edition in College Park.
Maryland's Board of Public Works approved a plan to make $20 million in green improvements to some of the older buildings on campus. According to the Diamondback, the plan entails more efficient lighting, better water conservation, and air conditioning improvements to 9 buildings, including the Record Armory, the Diner, and Coalfield House. The project isn't expected to be complete until April 2011, but it won't have any effect on classes in those buildings.
With students paying over $1,700 for meal plans, many wonder where the money goes. Some question whether they're getting the best value for their buck. Terp Weekly Edition's Nkechi Mogekwu, Whitney Taylor, Kyle Patton, and Hal DeCourcy looked into it, and they tell us that meal plans actually go much further than most people think.
When it comes to spending on food, many students are up in arms with frustration.
I think prices are ridiculous. I think
they're trying to rip students off.
Yeah.
I think they're ridiculous. Overpriced. Paying too much for too little.
But Director of Dining Services, Colin Wright Weaver, says they do their best to provide fair pricing.
We try to be very price competitive to other campus environments, to other restaurant environments, to other fast food. So where we have a like product, we're going to look for a like price comparison.
But this student begs to differ.
Prices are outrageous. If I want to eat like a healthy, well-balanced meal, like with some kind of salad, fruit, and you know whatever meal on the side, for me that's probably around $15 or $16 for that kind of price. I could eat it out back every day.
The problem, says Wright Weaver, may not be the prices of the food. She says students have to do a better job of managing what they have to spend.
Meal plans are just like test scores in a classroom. It's almost like a bell-shaped curve. There are some students that have a lot of points left over, and on the other end, students that have run out.
Right, Weaver says it's inevitable. Some students will always feel cheated, like these diners.
It is expensive. I actually ran out of diner points.
You get your typical meal with a drink. It's close to $8, $9, $10 at a time. You could go down to Route 1 and get the same filling meal for a lot less.
Students who live on campus are required to have meal plans. Those plans range from $1,600 to $1,800 per semester. Wright Weaver says about $400 from every meal plan goes to cover non-food expenses.
It really covers everything that dining services does that is not the direct cost associated with getting your food out. So my salary, for example, is part of the entire dining overhead process.
Dining services operate on a break-even basis. Revenues above costs are used to help upgrade facilities. Wright Weaver says the North and South Campus dining halls have recently benefited from that.
So if you walked into the diner 6 months ago, you would have seen walls that were painted, I think, an off-white. It felt a lot like an old cafeteria. And so now if you walk in there, the walls have been painted like you would find in a restaurant.
And students have noticed.
I really like how they've like kind of spruced the dining like areas up and everything. So like it kind of makes it feel a little less like cold.
Weaver encourages students to send constructive feedback on all dining issues and promises to work with students in finding better ways to manage meal plan point allocations. In College Park, Emi Ketchumogeku for Terp Weekly Edition.
Suicide bombings are almost weekly occurrences in many places around the world. It's a violent sacrifice that leaves one big question unanswered, and that question is, why? One expert on the topic has explored what goes on in the mind of a suicide bomber and shared that information at a campus forum last week. Terp Weekly Edition's Matt Reisner was there.
The recruiters and the dispatchers planned for my suicide. They offered me explosive belt or other...
Criminologist and terrorism expert Dr. Anat Burko gave a stirring speech involving her time interviewing unsuccessful suicide bombers and the people who are responsible for sending them out. Burko is a member of Israel's counterterrorism team, but that's not what led her to develop expertise in the subject.
I thought to find a very interesting topic for my PhD dissertation, so I started in the 90s to deal with this phenomena after it started in Israel, and suicide terror attacks were like on daily basis. And I started with the dispatchers of suicide bombers.
Burko even interviewed the Hamas spiritual leader Sheikh Yassin, who she says is like Osama bin Laden for Israelis. She admits to getting nervous when talking with these would-be bombers.
Oh, it's very, you can say that it is very dangerous. I'm like Clarice sitting in the cell with Hannibal Lecter many times. But I know how to manage.
Burko says suicide bombers don't consider it suicide at all, but instead they view it as a sacrifice for their god, Allah. By giving up their lives, they would become a shaheed, which would allow them to obtain all the forbidden desires they can imagine in the afterlife.
This is such a kind of research that I think that it's very important to understand and their inner world, to understand their motives, to touch the terrorists, and not to talk about terrorism and not to see even one terrorist in your life.
Burko says she only has to look at her subjects, both men and women, to realize their hatred for the Western world runs deep.
They hate us. When I say us, I mean the West, America, the big Satan, and Israel, the small Satan. They hate us.
And Burko says it's not hard getting the information out. These failed suicide bombers say they have nothing to lose and willingly offer up answers to all of Burko's questions. But as for remorse, Burko says their only concern is for their families, not for themselves or the people they harm. I'm Matt Reisner, reporting for Terp Weekly Edition.
Coming up on Terp Weekly Edition, the Ace of Cakes bakes for students.
And a famous sports writer returns to his alma mater. Stay tuned. This is Terp Weekly Edition. Welcome back to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm John Wilmot.
And I'm Andrew Lean. Ritchie Coliseum played host to another boxing event over the weekend. This time, it was the National Collegiate Boxing Championships. A crowd of over 500 people showed up on Saturday to watch the fights. The U.S. Military Academy took home the team national championship, with the Naval Academy coming in second. Maryland sent five fighters to the championships, but none made it to the finals. Josh Stone and Mark Shore both made it to the semifinals, but Maryland did come away with a victory on the women's side. Elizabeth Morgan won the 125-pound championship.
One of the spectators at last weekend's boxing championships is a man renowned for his expertise on the sport. Terp Weekly Edition's Jeremy Moreland got a chance to sit down and talk with Maryland alum Bert Sugar, sports writer, historian, and boxing enthusiast.
With an old fedora hat on his head and an unlit cigar in his mouth, Bert Sugar signed copies of his latest book, Boxing's Greatest Fighters, for fans. He's a resident of New York now, but this Maryland alum has fond memories of the place he used to call home.
I really had a great time here, which you shouldn't say. You should say I studied my bunk off. But you learned. You learned people. You learned sports. You learned how to deal and interface with all manner of people, problems, And that's what Marilyn taught me.
Sugar was a business major with no plans of becoming a professional writer, but he still wrote for the Diamondback and hosted his own radio show at WMUC.
You would just go in and broadcast. We played, I remember, ding, 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 went the trolley, and this is Wayne Kennedy and Bert Sugar with an hour of your favorite jazz music. We don't know if it was their favorite, it was our favorite. We were playing it for ourselves.
After Maryland, Sugar went on to the University of Michigan for graduate and law school. He got a job in advertising in New York City, but decided he didn't want to go that route. He saw an opportunity in sports writing and set his sights on boxing.
70 people were running out to cover football, 80 basketball, 90 baseball. Nobody was entering boxing in the late 60s. I said, okay, that's me. I boxed. I love it.
Sugar has covered boxing for over 40 years. He's widely considered the greatest boxing writer of all time. As much as he loves boxing, he admits there are very few recognizable faces in the sport anymore.
Could go into a police lineup in their gloves, robes, and trunks holding their belts over their head. Not only would no one know who they are, they wouldn't know what these guys do for a living. They're so anonymous.
Sugar has also been very outspoken about the UFC and mixed martial arts, which has surged in popularity during boxing's decline.
If boxing has been described by the great writer Bud Schulberg as chess played with human bodies, mixed martial art is Grand Theft Auto played with human bodies. But in this society, violence sells.
But Sugar was pleased with the turnout for the boxing championships on Saturday.
More than some professional shows get in Baltimore. And there are probably some new fans here who came to root for their school, whatever that is, and have picked up a new interest in a sport.
But with all of his success, Sugar says he'll always remember the place that helped him get where he is today.
I was just a kid who wanted to be something, anything. And Marilyn helped fulfill the empty glass.
In College Park, I'm Jeremy Moreland, reporting for TERP Weekly Edition.
A special treat for students on campus last week, thanks to the host of a popular show on the Food Network. TERP Weekly Edition's John Harvey says this was one guest speaker that takes the cake, and then some.
We love Duff. He's hilarious. He makes the best cakes ever. And he used power tools when he cooks.
This is a chef unlike any other, and his fans love him for it. But don't make the mistake of calling him Ace.
My name is Duff, and I make cakes for a living. Then they make a TV show called Ace of Cakes, and that's why people get a little confused. They're like, hey, what's up, Ace? And I'm like, it's actually Duff.
Duff spoke to a packed house of over 800 people. Duff's been cooking professionally since the age of 14. And he tells me he started the show because he wanted a job that would allow him to bake cakes and play music.
I was always like the pastry guy, the cake guy, in every restaurant and hotel that I worked at. And then finally I was like, you know what? I just want to be in a band. I'm also a bass player. And I want to be in a band and be able to go on tour. So I started a cake shop out of my apartment in Baltimore. And I was just like making cakes for like friends and family. I got a little website, started making cakes. And I would just like not make cakes for a month and like go to Europe, go to Asia, go like wherever I'm and go on tour.
And 3 years after opening Baltimore's Charm City Cakes, Duff has made some pretty wild cakes. He tells me about one he's making this week that you could say is out of this world.
We're making two cakes for NASA. One of them is on one side of the hall, and it's a replica of the Hubble Space Telescope. And it's hanging from the ceiling. And then the other one is a 3-foot sphere of Jupiter. And that one's also hanging from the ceiling, but it's on a motor, so it's spinning.
That left me wondering. How do you hang a cake without it crumbling into pieces?
Well, you have to, like, build a whole, like, interior structure for it. Like, a lot of times if people watch the show, they're like, why are they woodworking or why are they welding or why are they doing this? Like, why are they soldering, you know, little motors together and lights and stuff? They're like, this is kind of why we have to do that.
But can people really eat these cakes?
They do get eaten. I make sure, like, when we did the premiere for the 5th Harry Potter movie, and they're all, like, afraid to eat the cakes. So I walked over to one of the caterers. I grabbed a knife and started cutting up the cake. And they were like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm cutting the cake. I made it. I'm serving it, you know. Because it's cake. You're supposed to eat it.
So is it music or is it cakes for Duff? Well, after thinking about it for a few seconds, an upcoming video game release seemed to sway his opinion.
This is pretty cool. Like, I mean, if somebody asked me, like, all right, do you want to be making cakes or, like, playing music for a living? Like, you know, I'd have to think about it. Like, you know, if somebody had some big fat record contract, was like, hey, you want this? You know, but at the same time, like, you know, who gets a Wii game? That's pretty cool.
And for his appearance here in College Park, Duff prepared a red, white, yellow, and testudo-adorned three-tier cake. Fans left with a little food for thought, as well as a slice of Duff's specialty. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm John Harvey.
Sidewalks were packed this past weekend as people of all ages came together at the annual Cherry Blossom Festival in D.C. Terp Weekly Edition's Melissa Mark was also there, taking in the sights and sounds.
With music playing from the Jefferson Memorial, tourists and local residents came out in force to enjoy the weather and the cherry blossoms. And they were rewarded.
We're here more at the peak of colors than we were the previous two times. So it's nice that way.
The crowds took advantage of the scene by picnicking under the trees and playing their own brand of music on the lawn. One group even decided to use some pedal power to take in the beauty of the blossoms.
We just biked in from Alexandria. It was windy, but it was good.
Groups of people walked along the tidal basin, often stopping to take pictures. I had a chance to talk to some of these folks, and most of them agreed. It was the busiest cherry blossom festival they've ever seen.
A lot more people than I thought it was going to be. I had no idea it was this crowded.
It's crowded. It's very, very crowded. It takes a little away because it's hard to get around.
While some were annoyed at the crowd, others didn't seem to mind it.
I think it's amazing. I love the variety of people, all the different languages being spoken, the beauty, everything.
The crowd never seemed to die, even into the night. As the sun set, many people still lingered around the cherry blossoms, taking in every last bit of beauty, which only comes once a year. I'm Melissa Mark reporting from the Cherry Blossom Festival for Terp Weekly Edition.
That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Andrew Lean.
And I'm John Wilmot. We'll be back next week with more news from in and around College Park. Don't forget to check out our podcast. We're on the web at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.